Chapter 110. Officiates as a kind of gentleman usher, in bringing various people together, the storm had long given place to a calm the most profound, and the evening was pretty far advanced. Indeed, supper was over, and the process of digestion proceeding as favorably as, under the influence of complete tranquility, cheerful conversation, and a moderate allowance of brandy and water, most wise men conversant with the anatomy and functions of the human frame will consider that it ought to have proceeded, when the three friends, or as one might say, both in a civil and religious sense, and with proper deference and regard to the holy state of matrimony, the two friends, Mr. and Mrs. Browdy counting as no more than one, were startled by the noise of loud and angry threatenings below stairs, which presently attained so high a pitch, and were conveyed besides in language so towering, sanguinary, and ferocious, that it could hardly have been surpassed, if there had actually been a Saracen's head then present in the establishment, supported on the shoulders and surmounting the trunk of a real, live, furious, and most unappeasable Saracen. This turmoil, instead of quickly subsiding after the first outburst, as turmoils not unfrequently do, whether in taverns, legislative assemblies, or elsewhere, into a mere grumbling and growling squabble, increased every moment, and although the whole din appeared to be raised by but one pair of lungs, yet that one pair was of so powerful a quality, and repeated such words as scoundrel, apostrophe rascal, insolent puppy, and a variety of expletives no less flattering to the party addressed, with such great relish and strength of tone, that a dozen voices raised in concert under any ordinary circumstances would have made far less uproar, and created much smaller consternation. "Why, what's the matter? Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Nicholas, moving hastily towards the door. John Browdy was striding in the same direction, when Mrs. Browdy turned pale, and, leaning back in her chair, requested him with a faint voice to take notice, that if he ran into any danger it was her intention to fall into hysterics immediately, and that the consequences might be more serious than he thought for. John looked rather disconcerted by this intelligence, though there was a lurking grin on his face at the same time. But, being quite unable to keep out of the fray, he calm promised the matter by tucking his wife's arm under his own, and, thus accompanied, following Nicholas downstairs with all speed. The passage outside the coffee room door was the scene of disturbance, and here were congregated the coffee room customers and waiters, together with two or three coachmen and helpers from the yard. These had hastily assembled round a young man who, from his appearance, might have been a year or two older than Nicholas, and who, besides having given utterance to the defiances just now described, seemed to have proceeded to even greater lengths in his indignation, inasmuch as his feet had no other covering than a pair of stockings, while a couple of slippers lay at no great distance from the head of a prostrate figure in an opposite corner, who bore the appearance of having been shot into his present retreat by means of a kick, and complimented by having the slippers flung about his ears afterwards. The coffee room customers, and the waiters, and the coachmen, and the helpers, not to mention a barmaid who was looking on from behind an open sash window, seemed at that moment, if a spectator might judge from their winks, nods, and muttered exclamations, strongly disposed to take part against the young gentleman in the stockings. Observing this, and that the young gentleman was nearly of his own age, and had in nothing the appearance of an habitual brawler, Nicholas, impelled by such feelings as will influence young men sometimes, felt a very strong disposition to side with the weaker party, and so thrust himself at once into the center of the group, and in a more emphatic tone, perhaps, than circumstances might seem to warrant, demanded what all that noise was about. "Hallo! Apostrophe, apostrophe," said one of the men from the yard, "this is somebody in disguise. This is apostrophe room for the eldest son of the Emperor of Russia, gentlemen." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried another fellow. disregarding these sallies, which were uncommonly well received, as sallies at the expense of the best-dressed persons in a crowd usually are. Nicholas glanced carelessly round, and addressing the young gentleman, who had by this time picked up his slippers and thrust his feet into them, repeated his inquiries with a courteous air. "A mere nothing." ... he replied. At this a murmur was raised by the lookers-on, and some of the boldest cried, "Oh, indeed. Wasn't it though? Nothing, eh? He called it nothing, did he? Lucky for him, if he found it nothing." ... These and many other expressions of ironical disapprobation having been exhausted, two or three of the out-of-door fellows began to hustle Nicholas and the young gentleman who had made the noise, stumbling against them by accident, and treading on their toes, and so forth. But this being a round game, and one not necessarily limited to three or four players, was open to John Browdie too, who, bursting into the little crowd to the great terror of his wife and falling about in all directions, now to the right, now to the left, now forwards, now backwards, and accidentally driving his elbow through the hat of the tallest helper, who had been particularly active, speedily caused the odds to wear a very different appearance. While more than one stout fellow limped away to a respectful distance, anathematizing with tears in his eyes the heavy tread and ponderous feet of the burly Yorkshireman. "Let me see him do it again," said he who had been kicked into the corner, rising as he spoke, apparently more from the fear of John Browdie's inadvertently treading upon him than from any desire to place himself on equal terms with his late adversary. "Let me see him do it again. That's all. Let me hear you make those remarks again," said the young man, "and I'll knock that head of yours in among the wine glasses behind you there." Here a waiter who had been rubbing his hands in excessive enjoyment of the scene, so long as only the breaking of heads was in question, adjured the spectators with great earnestness to fetch the police, declaring that otherwise murder would be surely done, and that he was responsible for all the glass and china on the premises. "No one need trouble himself to stir," said the young gentleman. "I am going to remain in the house all night, and shall be found here in the morning, if there is any assault to answer for." What did you strike him for? Asked one of the bystanders. "Ah, what did you strike him for?" Demanded the others. The unpopular gentleman looked coolly round, and addressing himself to Nicholas, said, "You inquired just now what was the matter here. The matter is simply this. Yonder person, who was drinking with a friend in the coffee room, when I took my seat there for half an hour before going to bed, for I have just come off a journey, and preferred stopping here tonight, to going home at this hour, where I was not expected until tomorrow, chose to express himself in very disrespectful and insolently familiar terms of a young lady whom I recognized from his description and other circumstances, and whom I have the honor to know." As he spoke loud enough to be overheard by the other guests who were present, I informed him most civilly that he was mistaken in his conjectures, which were of an offensive nature, and requested him to forbear. He did so for a little time, but as he chose to renew his conversation when leaving the room, in a more offensive strain than before, I could not refrain from making after him, and facilitating his departure by a kick, which reduced him to the posture in which you saw him just now. "I am the best judge of my own affairs, I take it," said the young man, who had certainly not quite recovered from his recent heat. "If anybody here thinks proper to make this quarrel his own, I have not the smallest earthly objection, I do assure him." Of all possible courses of proceeding under the circumstances detailed, there was certainly not one which, in his then state of mind, could have appeared more laudable to Nicholas than this. There were not many subjects of dispute which at that moment could have come home to his own breast more powerfully, for having the unknown uppermost in his thoughts, it naturally occurred to him that he would have done just the same if any audacious gossiper durst have presumed in his hearing to speak lightly of her. Influenced by these considerations, he espoused the young gentleman's quarrel with great warmth, protesting that he had done quite right, and that he respected him for it, which John Browdie, albeit not quite clear as to the merits, immediately protested to, with not inferior vehemence. "Let him take care, that's all," apostrophe said the defeated party, who was being rubbed down by a waiter after his recent fall on the moldy boards. "He don't knock me about for nothing, I can tell him that. A pretty state of things, if a man isn't to admire a handsome girl without being beat to pieces for it." This reflection appeared to have great weight with the young lady in the bar, who, adjusting her cap as she spoke, and glancing at a mirror, declared that it would be a very pretty state of things indeed, and that if people were to be punished for actions so innocent and natural as that, there would be more people to be knocked down than there would be people to knock them down, and that she wondered what the gentleman meant by it that she did. "My dear girl," said the young gentleman in a low voice, advancing towards the sash window. "Nonsense, sir," replied the young lady sharply, smiling though as she turned aside, and biting her lip, whereat Mrs. Browdie, who was still standing on the stairs, glanced at her with disdain, and called to her husband to come away. "No, but listen to me," said the young man. "If admiration of a pretty face were criminal, I should be the most hopeless person alive, for I cannot resist one. It has the most extraordinary effect upon me, checks and controls me in the most furious and obstinate mood. You see what an effect yours has had upon me already." "Oh, that's very pretty," replied the young lady, tossing her head. "But yes, I know it's very pretty," said the young man, looking with an air of admiration in the barmaid's face. "I said so, you know, just this moment. But beauty should be spoken of respectfully, and in proper terms, and with a becoming sense of its worth and excellence, whereas this fellow has no more notion." The young lady interrupted the conversation at this point by thrusting her head out of the bar window and inquiring of the waiter in a shrill voice whether that young man who had been knocked down was going to stand in the passage all night, or whether the entrance was to be left clear for other people. The waiters, taking the hint and communicating it to the hostlers, were not slow to change their tone too, and the result was that the unfortunate victim was bundled out in a twinkling. "I am sure I have seen that fellow before," said Nicholas. "Indeed," replied his new acquaintance. "I am certain of it," said Nicholas, pausing to reflect. "Where can I have stopped? Yes, to be sure, he belongs to a register office up at the west end of the town. I knew I recollected the face." It was, indeed, Tom, the ugly clerk. "That's odd enough," said Nicholas, ruminating upon the strange manner in which the register office seemed to start up and stare him in the face every now and then, and when he least expected it. "I am much obliged to you for your kind advocacy of my cause, when it most needed an advocate," said the young man, laughing, and drawing a card from his pocket. "Perhaps you will do me the favor to let me know where I can thank you." Nicholas took the card, and glancing at it involuntarily as he returned the compliment, evinced very great surprise. "Mr. Frank Cheeryble," said Nicholas. "Surely not the nephew of Cheeryble Brothers, who is expected tomorrow." "I don't usually call myself the nephew of the firm," returned Mr. Frank, good-humoredly. "But of the two excellent individuals who compose it, I am proud to say I am the nephew. And you, I see, are Mr. Nickleby, of whom I have heard so much. This is a most unexpected meeting, but not the less welcome, I assure you. Apostrophe, Nicholas responded to these compliments with others of the same kind, and they shook hands warmly. Then he introduced John Browdie, who had remained in a state of great admiration ever since the young lady in the bar had been so skillfully won over to the right side. Then Mrs. John Browdie was introduced, and finally they all went upstairs together, and spent the next half hour with great satisfaction and mutual entertainment. Mrs. John Browdie beginning the conversation by declaring that of all the made-up things she ever saw, that young woman below stairs was the vainest and the plainest. This Mr. Frank Cheeryble, although, to judge from what had recently taken place, a hot-headed young man, which is not an absolute miracle and phenomenon in nature, was a sprightly, good-humored, pleasant fellow, with much both in his countenance and disposition, that reminded Nicholas very strongly of the kind-hearted brothers. His manner was as unaffected as theirs, and his demeanor full of that heartiness which, to most people who have anything generous in their composition, is peculiarly prepossessing. Add to this, that he was good-looking and intelligent, had a plentiful share of vivacity, was extremely cheerful, and accommodated himself in 5 minutes' time to all John Browdie's oddities with as much ease as if he had known him from a boy, and it will be a source of no great wonder that, when they parted for the night, he had produced a most favorable impression, not only upon the worthy Yorkshireman and his wife, but upon Nicholas also, who, revolving all these things in his mind as he made the best of his way home, arrived at the conclusion that he had laid the foundation of a most agreeable and desirable acquaintance. But it's a most extraordinary thing about that register office fellow. ... thought Nicholas. Is it likely that this nephew can know anything about that beautiful girl? When Tim Linkinwater gave me to understand the other day that he was coming to take a share in the business here, he said he had been superintending it in Germany for 4 years, and that during the last 6 months he had been engaged in establishing an agency in the north of England. That's 4 years and a half, 4 years and a half. She can't be more than 17, say 18 at the outside. She was quite a child when he went away then. I should say he knew nothing about her, and had never seen her, so he can give me no information. At all events, thought Nicholas, coming to the real point in his mind, there can be no danger of any prior occupation of her affections in that quarter, that's quite clear. Is selfishness a necessary ingredient in the composition of that passion called love, or does it deserve all the fine things which poets, in the exercise of their undoubted vocation, have said of it? There are, no doubt, authenticated instances of gentlemen having given up ladies and ladies having given up gentlemen to meritorious rivals, under circumstances of great high-mindedness. But is it quite established that the majority of such ladies and gentlemen have not made a virtue of necessity, and nobly resigned what was? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.